Hello and welcome. Is government and big business in the United States trying to break the back of labor unions? It's traditionally accepted that these unions have helped to create the country's middle class, and weakening them could have an impact on the economy and ultimately the next election. Well, some states have been pushing hard for laws that would severely limit the rights of organized labor, leading to angry protests. In Wisconsin, hundreds of thousands of demonstrators came out against a controversial bill that would take away workers' rights to collectively bargain for better wages and working conditions. Even though Wisconsin's governor, Scott Walker, has approved the law, protesters made it clear that the fight is not over. Supporters of workers' unions accuse conservatives of trying to break labor unions because they're viewed as the most powerful counterbalance to corporate politics. But critics say the unions have too much political power and hurt competition. So today we ask, what lies ahead for organized labor in the U.S.? Remember, you can join our conversation with your questions and comments by sending an SMS or an email. Joining me now is an icon of American politics and four-time U.S. presidential candidate, Ralph Nader. His organization, Public Citizen, advocates citizens' rights, acting as a watchdog for issues such as the environment and public safety. Mr. Nader first made headlines in 1965 when he took the auto industry to task for producing unsafe vehicles. Mr. Nader, it's great to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
Now, every day on the way to the studio, I walk past a local hotel where there's a protest going on, a dozen or so protesters making noise and demanding their rights be heard. And it's been going on for weeks now, and their voice doesn't seem to have been heard. Now, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but it makes me wonder, have labor unions lost their clout in the U.S.?
They're very weak compared even to 30, 40 years ago. Most people don't know that the Taft-Hartley Act of 1947 is the most anti-union law in the entire Western world, and it's still on the books, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, labor unions have been declining in membership. For example, it's now down to about 13% of all American workers, and in the corporate sector, it's under 10%. That's the lowest, like, in 50 years. Third, of course, NAFTA and WTO have further jeopardized the influence of labor unions because the companies can shut down and go to Mexico and China and leave them unemployed. Finally, the crash of the Wall Street crash leading to the recession, leading to reduced revenues by the states, which raises the deficit, set the stage for the Republican Party attack on the very idea, the very constitutionally based idea of collective bargaining by workers with their large employers. And that's what's going on in Madison, Wisconsin.
And I was going to ask you about that. What do you see as the most significant impact of what the labor law is being pushed through there?
Well, they want to eliminate, for all practical purposes, collective bargaining. So with public employees, firefighters, police, teachers, and other public employees. And they make no bones about it. They, at the same time, are giving big tax breaks to corporations. So this year, the deficit in Wisconsin is $137 million, and Governor Walker has already given the corporations a $140 million tax break. In the next 2 years, there's a larger deficit. But basically, it's all about breaking the political clout of the labor unions, which are known to give more money to the Democrats than to Republicans in elections.
Now, 16 states are trying to push through labor laws, and I wonder if Wisconsin is seen as like a testing ground.
Yes, and so is Ohio, and so is Indiana. They're in the news, too, and there are protests there. This is the last stand of the organized labor in this country, and that's why I think there's going to be a backlash. They're going to finally get out on the streets. They're going to finally march. They're going to finally picket. And the head of the AFL-CIO down the street here in Washington, Rich Trumka, is going to have to make a very serious decision. He's been wooed by President Obama. He was invited to see the Super Bowl in the White House with 100 people the other day, and he's been very quiet about criticizing President Obama. But President Obama is also going to have to make a decision. Look what happened just a few days ago. The unions in Wisconsin invited Vice President Biden to go and speak at that huge rally this last Saturday. Biden calls himself a union guy. That's his words. He had to clear it through the White House. And the White House political operatives, with the obvious knowledge of President Obama, said no. Now, this is a very, very severe rupture with organized labor. But organized labor is so weak that they're not even making it public, which I am today.
Now, you actually wrote an open letter to President Obama as well, telling that in his first years he had, quote, developed a wider asymmetry between his association with big business executives and the leaders of national, civic and labor groups. What would you expect him to respond? How would you expect him to respond? What would that message achieve?
Well, he's not pushing for labor law reform. He abandoned his pledge for the card check made in 2008 to give workers an easier way to form unions. He promised a minimum wage of $9.50 this year, back in 2008. He hasn't even mentioned it. This is the last test. In other words, if he keeps Vice President Biden from going to Madison to talk to the unions that supported him in the election, without which he wouldn't be in the White House today. The question is, how far will he prostrate himself in front of the corporate giants, because he knows that the unions have nowhere to go, because they're not going to vote Republican. And he's pulling the string and pulling the strings like an elastic band, right? And I think this one is when it's going to snap.
Let me ask you to address a viewer email that came in, sir. It came from Hazel Abdul, who wrote in saying, the protests in Wisconsin are happening due to the absence of labor law reform after the recent financial crisis. The working class was hit very badly in these past years. Now, what sort of reforms would you have expected then to take place that might have helped?
Well, what he promised Mr. Trump of the FL-CIO was what's called the card check. That is, in an employment area, if a majority of workers sign a card, they want a union, that's it. Right now, there are all kinds of hoops and problems and delays. He hasn't touched that. He promised millions of workers to get a $9.50 minimum wage. Just think, the minimum wage today, federal, is $7.25. Adjusted for inflation, Riz, it would be $10 from 1968. If you took the minimum wage 1968, adjusted for inflation, it would be $10. So with the economy almost doubling in that period since 1968, with worker productivity doubling, right? Where is the federal minimum wage? It's $2.75 less in purchasing power than it was in 1968. That gives you the essence of the decline of the standard of living in this country. So if he doesn't stand up for those millions of workers, we might as well just call him a president in a corporate prison called the White House.
Now, it's interesting what you raised, the issue about these are the voters who put him in the White House, because a poll in Wisconsin indicated that 57% of voters in the state are opposed to the removal of collective bargaining rights. Now, it makes me wonder, isn't Governor Walker and his political allies, aren't they taking a chance with their support for the next election?
They are taking a chance. In fact, the opponents now are going to start a recall where they're not going to wait till the next election in Wisconsin. You can actually get a number of petitions, and you'll have an intermediate election to recall whether Governor Walker or the Republicans in the legislature.
I'm going to put a video question that we received for you, sir. It came from Nancy Spence of the Amalgamated Transit Union. Listen to this, sir.
What plans do NATO have for the labor movement? What is his plans to keep American families working?
I just wonder how you respond to her. You know, what plans do you have for the labor movement? How do you keep Americans working?
Well, public works. I mean, our schools, our clinics, our public transit, they're all crumbling. Roads, bridges, millions of jobs you can't export to China, obviously. And what President Obama has not done is gone heavily in that. Instead, he's directed the tax dollar to bail out the crooks and speculators in Wall Street. You don't bail out the perpetrators. You bail out when the perpetrators crash, the victims, the workers, the consumers. That's the big mistake he made, but it's exactly what George W. Bush did. That's why I call the Obama administration Obama Bush. There's a seamless continuity in military, foreign policy, obeisance to law, to Wall Street, and other issues with the Bush administration.
Now, do you think that's intentional, Mr. Nader, or do you think that's a consequence of the system being so entrenched and being so lumbering that no one's able to come in and change it, no matter what their promises are? Is President Obama manacled to a system that's hard to change?
Well, it's a lack of courage. We expected President Obama, at least his supporters, I was competing with him, to be a transforming leader, because he came in on a great mandate, and he's a transactional leader. He cuts deals. He's cowed by the Republicans in Congress. Look at this. Every 3 weeks they extend the budget resolution. What a disgrace. Lyndon Johnson, he would have taking care of the Republicans in the Congress. He's not a strong leader. And that's what it comes down to. He clearly inherited a terrible situation from George W. Bush. There's no denying that. But that also is the opportunity for him to rise and become a transformer leader. And I think he would have had the majority of the people strongly behind him.
Now, we had, of course, on Wednesday, thousands of protesters at a fundraiser here in Washington, D.C. It was a fundraiser attended by Wisconsin Republicans. And those demonstrating outside, some of them, this is what they had to say. Listen to this.
And I think that the union workers need collective rights. If it wasn't for unions, we wouldn't have weekends, we wouldn't have 40-hour work weeks, we wouldn't have child labor protection laws, we wouldn't have a whole host of laws that make America, America.
Unions are important because there's nobody left to speak for working people. There's no other organized effort, and workers can't speak for themselves without an organized effort at least be represented.
I think in general, labor is being disvalued, and you're talking about it in a world scale, but we can actually do something about it here.
I'm concerned that it'll be a trickle-down effect. Once it happens in Wisconsin, then they'll think it's okay to do in other states.
It's a manufactured budget crisis. There's no budget crisis whatsoever. They're giving tax breaks to the rich, and they're cutting the budgets and basically balancing on the backs of working people like my parents. It's completely obscene.
Listening to those sentiments, I mean, how widely do you think that represents how the American public feels, Mr. Nader? And I wonder, what sort of message is the public now sending out to politicians then?
Well, those are very accurate observations, and they affect tens of millions of workers. The top 10% are doing okay. The top 20% are making out. The top 1% are obscenely rich. But the rest of the country, just think, one out of every three full-time workers in America makes Walmart wages. You know, like $7.50, $8, $9, $10 before deductions. That's one out of three for starters. So what this crisis in Wisconsin is showing, it's putting on the air for the first time the real grievances, not the sugar-coated rhetoric of politicians who take money from corporate interests.
Now, is there an inflexibility on both sides in the disputes that are taking place?
Well, the flexibility should come from the perpetrators. You know, when you have somebody pounding people on the ground, you don't say, what's the flexibility of the victim? The corporations have already bitten off a huge chunk of worker well-being, worker pay that is accrued to them at the top. They have unloaded all kinds of factories and jobs to overseas repressive countries to ship back to this country. So it's they that have to give. There should be a Wall Street speculation tax, not an increased tax on workers. Isn't it amazing that millions of workers, as we speak, is going to stores and they buy products. They pay 6, 7, 8% sales tax. But right now, if somebody bought $100 million of Exxon derivatives in Wall Street, they pay nothing. You see how the class divide is? And hundreds of billions of dollars can be raised in a simple electronic manner with this massive velocity of stock and derivative trades. And it's not even being discussed by the Obama administration. This is what the AFL-CIO has got to start waking up.
Let me put an email question to you that came in critical of the unions from a viewer by the name of Donald Johnson, who wrote in saying, public sector unions are albatrosses that need to go away, but not until a public review board takes over their legitimate functions. How does that sound to you?
Well, I'd like to see where he makes his living. The point is that collective bargaining by unions is a human right. It's really built into the UN Declaration of Human Rights all over the world. And one of the indications of a democracy is whether there's a vibrant, independent, organized labor movement. I mean, that speaker you just showed, it helps non-union members. The unions gave America the weekend, the 40-hour week, the minimum wage, protection on pensions, and a lot of employers who didn't want their workers to be unionized upped their treatment of these workers. So it isn't just the union workers that are involved here. This is a battle for the working people of America.
What that viewer, Donald Johnson, suggested about a public review board, how do you regard that, perhaps reshaping what might be the function of the unions and creating a new kind of institution that perhaps takes on that function without kind of the baggage of the unions?
Well, we have fought in the past against union corruption, way years ago, United Mine Workers. So we know about the problems of union democracy between the bosses and the rank and file. The problem is that now unions have cleaned up many of their acts, often because of desperation. There's still a problem. Second is that they are much weaker, so they don't have much political power to abuse. And third, I don't know any substitute, Riz, for workers collectively bargaining, sitting across the table with their employers and hammering out a contract. I mean, if anybody has a better way to protect workers that is under the control of workers, not a company union, I'd like to hear it.
Now, we had an email that came in from a viewer by the name of Scott Andy Free, who says, the Republicans are selfish to muzzle the unions. They fail to understand that they are ultimately waging a war against themselves. But from what we've been discussing, it doesn't sound like it's specifically a Republican or Democratic Party thing. It seems to be across the two. But maybe perhaps you say the Republican parties have taken stronger action. Is that the case?
Oh, yes. There's no doubt about it. The Republicans are in the lead to crush the labor movement, number one. And, you know, they're intellectually inebriated, these Republicans, intellectually inebriated with their ideology, and they're taking big money from the big employers. So that's their motivation. And I think they're heading for the cliff, Riz. I think they've pushed the envelope so far, they're going to finally wake up workers in this country. And they may be heading for major election loss because they don't know when to stop. They don't have limits. They're cutting all kinds of aid to children's health in the House of Representatives, for example, cutting all kinds of energy assistance for the poor, and they're still refusing to raise long overdue taxes on the rich, which have been cut under the George Bush administration. This is what's called a plutocracy.
But judging by what you say, even if the Republicans lose their position, yeah, and their power at the polls, it doesn't mean necessarily that there'll be any real change with the Democrats.
There won't be any change, but it won't get worse. You wouldn't have a Wisconsin-type situation.
We have an email that came in from a viewer by the name of Riskeldi Satke, who says, will the events in Wisconsin bring about fundamental change, or will this blow over without any consequences to big business? What do you predict will ultimately happen?
I think the laws are going to sink the Republicans that they pass. The polls are already showing nationally 2-1 against what the Republicans are doing. That means a lot of independents when it's 60% to 31%. So I think the Republicans, they are so giddy with their recent victories in 2010. They don't know. They're heading for the cliff if they keep pushing and keep pushing. And that involves people who are called conservatives. Look, if you're in a Walmart employee and you're making $8.50 an hour and you're a conservative, you're going to say, no, I don't want $10 an hour, which is the equivalent of the minimum wage adjusted for inflation in 1968. I think the Republicans are creating an illusory bubble.
Now, if the unions have been such a powerful force with funding in elections, where are they going to put their money? If they can't trust either party, if they feel they're going to get, you know, stung by both sides, where are they going to put their money?
They'll always go for the least worst, which is the Democrats. There's no doubt about it. The Democrats' rhetoric is pro-labor. It's just their record hasn't been very forcible. There's no doubt. And that's why Obama can ignore them, because he knows, where are you going to go, labor? You're not going to go for the Republican. By the way, the percent of money now in elections is about 30-1 in terms of corporate commercial money to labor. 50 years ago, it was like 2 or 3-1. You see how it's tipping very dramatically, which is why the Democrats are as eager to raise money from Wall Street and other commercial interests as the Republicans. And Obama, actually in 2008, raised more money from Wall Street interests and corporate law firms than any presidential candidate in history, Republican or Democrat.
It's interesting because the work environment in America, as in other places, has changed quite dramatically. People are no longer in sort of fixed employment. They're on contracts.
Yes.
They're on a very different kind of footing. They don't have that kind of security even with the piece of paper they sign. So I wonder ultimately what's going to happen. It seems like a downhill slide for the unions anyway in the long term.
You're quite right. 25% of the jobs created in the last year and a half are temporary jobs. So more and more of the new jobs created are temporary jobs. It could be 20 hours a week, 25 hours a week, no rights whatsoever. So we're heading for a real crisis. The question is whether the American people are up to it, whether they're going to say to these corporations, you have no loyalty to our country anymore. You were born in the U.S. You made money on the back of American workers. You went to Washington when you were in trouble and were bailed out by American taxpayers. When you got in trouble overseas, the American Marines saved you. And now you come back and you say to the American people, we're out of here. We're going to China with your jobs. I mean, that's a very powerful message. And if people start feeling their own power and simply begin to demonstrate and march all over the country, not just Wisconsin or Indiana, you can begin to see the transformation of political balances in this country for the people, subordinating the corporatist powers in the country.
Do you see in any way a small revolution, a revolution with a small r, if you like,
yes,
taking place in America with people becoming so disgruntled?
Yes. There's no doubt. I mean, you know, we're not used to large marches anymore in America. And when you see 100,000 people show up, and then day after day, 10,000, 15 in Madison, Wisconsin, bringing in university students, high school students, it could spread. You don't want to, you know, exaggerate the possibility. But the provocation by the Republican governors and the Republicans in the House will certainly increase the likelihood of a popular revolt.
Now, you did mention about how you said there's an inequity in that big business and the corporations being bailed out. Yes. And everyone else is suffering. But ultimately, the country is fairly crippled financially. Is there any real scope to create change, the grassroots kind of change that you would like to see happen?
Yes, it's quite easy to deal with the budget deficit. For example, you get out of Afghanistan, you get out of Iraq, you cut the bloated military budget, which even ex-generals and admirals are aghast at. And then you put a speculation tax on Wall Street, and then you cut out all the corporate welfare, subsidies and handouts, you end up with a surplus. You end up with America coming home, with America rebuilding our country. I think the foreign countries still look at America too much with the razzmatazz of the propaganda in Hollywood, you know? This country is heading toward third world status.
Now, I know when we spoke at the time of your 2008 presidential bid, you talked about your demand for active citizenry, the fact that largely people have sat back and let the politicians do everything and have been essentially let down from what you're saying. Now, it's quite shameful for a lot of people to see how low the voter turnout is in America. What is it going to take to get people out there to make their vote count, to get their vote out there and to make it count and to change things the way you'd like to see?
I think leadership by the labor unions, they do have a lot of money in the reserve. The UAW has hundreds of millions of dollars in their strike fund. They've got to start now organizing the people in the country. In fact, the head of the UAW indicated that he was quite interested in that. It's really the last stand, but the labor unions, they have their headquarters, they have their staff, they have their network, they have money, and they could leverage tens of millions of workers into demanding different kind of candidates, different kind of parties, different kind of policies. Our country is beset by more problems than it deserves, but more solutions than it applies. We have a huge number of solutions for energy, for housing, for public transit, for environment. All this generates economic activity, but it also saves lives and advances health and safety.
But as you mentioned earlier in the show, many corporations have that valve of being able to outsource their work. And it effectively leaves workers vulnerable because their jobs can be shifted. So what would you propose allows people the security to know their work can't just be shipped offshore?
It's called a social tariff. You say, okay, if you're going to ship a well-operating auto plant in Wisconsin to Mexico or to China, when they come back, you're going to be hit with a social tariff to help the workers adjust to new kinds of employment. That's one way. The more basic way is to initiate a six-month notification withdrawal from NAFTA and WTO, and we're the largest economy, and then renegotiate these trade agreements so they pull up standards of living from around the world instead of have repressive regimes inviting our companies and others to pull down standards on our country. If people want to read or more about what I think about this, my website is nader.org.
Thank you, sir. It's interesting, of course, we're seeing the rise of China, we're seeing the rise of India, Russia, Brazil, the BRIC countries, and the developing world. What impact do you think that's going to have on the way America has to rethink the way it treats its labor force, the way it restructures its economy?
Well, first of all, it's going to deal with a food shortage, because the appetite for food and meat products in China is growing in other places. So we're going to have to deal with whether we're going to burn fuel like corn ethanol, or we're going to expand it to help feed the world and keep food prices down. The coming danger in the consumer area is gigantic increases coming in food. In some areas, there are 50% increase in vegetables in some places in the country already. The second is, obviously, is that our wages will be going down. As they go down, you know, more plants will say, well, why should we go to China? Because we got wages. Now, the wages in the auto plants, the entry wage now $14. That's over a 50% cut. That's the cycle. It's not the cycle that I would like to see. I would like to see more community self-reliance in this country, more focus on our own economy, and not this huge interdependence. The earthquake in Japan, for example, has disrupted some of these chip companies, right? That disrupts the supply chain and is affecting companies and workers in our country. That's too much interdependence.
Mr. Nader, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Lots of topics. I hope we can get you back soon.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure, sir. And thank you for being with us. Now, remember, you can watch a podcast of the show on iTunes. Today, we feature my conversation with renowned French philosopher Bernard-Henri Lévy on the conflict in Libya. On the next show, elections in Haiti again. Will the third round of presidential elections release the country from political limbo? And what challenges will the new leader face? Make sure you tune in for that. From me and the team, we'll see you next time.